Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another one of these interviews. Now, what I'm doing this kind of interview era, and I thought it would be remiss to have this season where I actually talk to people for a change and not have my next guest on here. We've been kind of mutuals on Twitter for a long time. I've just realized now I'm introducing you. I'm not sure if I can say your name on YouTube. I can call you RFH.
You can just say RFH.
This is RFH, if you know what his name stands for in full. The H is a certain man with a moustache. but, I mean, despite what that name implies, you've been one of the more vocal critics of the right and of MAGA in general for quite a while. Just before we get going, I have to remind everyone you can buy courses at the Academic Agency, Trivia and the Bestseller there. Buy it now. Many other great courses available. And where can people find you?
Just on X and, well, Substack as well, actually. It's just RFH on X, but my ad is Hollow Earth Turf.
Hollow Earth Turf, right. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to talk about the state of politics in America and of MAGA in general. Just from my understanding, I mean, I've heard you tell your kind of backstory a few times, but one in the distant past, you did don the red hat. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I was like one of the first Trump supporters. Like, one, everyone thought it was like a joke or something. Like, the day he announced, I was on the Trump train. Very, very early. And in fact, I was in college at the time, and I remember like telling my friends that were in Young Americans for Liberty with me that I was like really excited for Trump and I was going to vote for him. And they were all like, you're not serious. Like, you're joking. Like, they really did not, they could not like wrap their mind around that. They just thought I was like trolling or something. But I ended up slowly getting them all on board the Trump train, which I now regret. But
have you ever repented for that in full? Or are any of the people you got on board the Trump train still on board the Trump train now?
I don't know, actually. It's been about, gosh, this is like 10 years ago now, you know, like, yeah, 2015. So I think actually a lot of them did sort of leave politics in general. I don't know if they like did vote for him like casually or something, but it does seem that a lot of people I was involved in politics with back then also just got really tired of it and left, and just, I don't know, wanted to live like normal lives. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of them are like gung-ho Trumpers. They may have just voted for him because I don't think they're the types that would ever vote for like a Democrat, particularly Kamala Harris. So,
and can you remember the point where you stepped off the Trump train? Like, at what point did you think, this is not what I thought it was? Or like, what was it that made you turn against MAGA? Because I would say on Twitter, you've been one of the chief like MAGA villains or mega heels for years at this point. So where was it?
I mean, it was kind of a slow ride off that train, to be honest, because like I said, I was just such an early supporter and I was really gung-ho about the whole thing. It wasn't like one day I was just like, I hate this man. I kind of went from big supporter to, well, he's been disappointing, but he's funny, to this is a disaster. What is happening to our country? Were the resist libs right about everything? I guess it was sort of a slow ride, but at some point in the 2020s, in the past, I don't know, year or two, I fully was just like, I can't with this person. He needs to be gone.
Now, in the hideous world of Twitter, which I hate, obviously, and daily, I just use my account to abuse Twitter these days, which doesn't make me very popular. But in that world, people talk about vibe shifts all the time. Oh, there's been a vibe shift. Everything is a vibe, which kind of irritates me because, you know, unlike you, RFH, I'm not a valley girl from California. I'm a bloke in my 40s. I don't give a fuck about vibes. But anyway, everybody keeps talking about vibes. At what point do you think that, because I remember, you know, a couple of years back where it was literally, it was just you, it was Dickie Spencer, you know, me to some extent, kind of on the turn, but there were very few critical voices. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel now that, I mean, it's like, you know, maybe like one in two people kind of ate the sort of stuff we say, or I mean, if it was not that high, there's a lot more people who are critical now than there were a couple of years ago. When and why do you think more and more people have come to think, you know, like us?
I think that's really recent. Like, I think it's after seeing Trump too just fail at everything. So I think a lot of these people are new to Trump as well. Like a lot of the Trump 1.0, I think a lot of the people originally who were very critical of Trump, but like, I guess associated with the right, were Trump 1.0 people. People like myself who were very early and just realized this is not what we thought it was going to be. But then COVID happened and a lot of the new people got radicalized from that. And then people were very unhappy with the Biden presidency. So all this, just a ragtag group of just weird people that have really nothing to do with each other, all kind of came on board the Trump train. And Trump 2.0 has just been disappointing, which is what I expected to happen. I after he was elected, I was still hoping, you know, there's still a little hope in you, like, okay, maybe it'll work out, maybe it'll be good. But my general thought is that it won't. We've already done this. He's a clown. He's going to fail again. Not even fail. He just doesn't care. So I think after this past year, after seeing their administration just not really get anything done. I mean, a lot of these people voted for him because of the economy. Economy seems to be doing worse. And a lot of the things that were promised with this whole vision of, yeah, you know, make America great again, clearly just hasn't happened. And deportations, what, they're kind of on the same level as Democrats prior to him. And now there's just been these terrible shootings and it's just been a mess, and you've got these buffoons he's hired that are clearly like incompetent. It's the aesthetics of it too. It's just a bunch of like Latinos arresting other Latinos. Everything about the administration is just so goofy. So I think the past year has really, a lot of people have jumped off. I think they showed that Gen Z, they like voted very red in this election, and now they're already back to supporting Democrats in the same levels they were prior. So they just became like really conservative for this like one election, and then now they're already over it. So it seems that they've even all cycled through this faster because it wasn't as ideological for them. I think they were just, a lot of people were upset about Biden and COVID and got sort of radicalized this way. But the Trump 1.0 people, I think it took us longer because it was more ideological for us. But it really hasn't, in my opinion, taken long for people to have sort of given up on him. Obviously, there's going to be that core base of MAGA that's just rabid and supports him no matter what. But I think a lot of the people that just kind of voted for him because they didn't like the Democrats at the time are over it. And I noticed like Nick became very critical of Trump, which is funny because he literally like went to J6. And he went from J6 to kind of shitting on him a lot and basically saying he wasn't going to vote for him in 2024, and saying like Kamala Harris had like a better meme game, and now he's like, you know, talking about Gavin. So it's quite funny, but it doesn't surprise me that Nick was kind of early on that. He does seem to have a better sense for these things.
That was one area where I disagreed with. I don't know if you guys were all messing around, but I disagree with Nick and you. And I didn't think Kamala had good meme game. I'm into pro wrestling, right? Or I used to follow pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And my whole line on the election was, look, it's obvious since what happened in Gaza, right? Various powerful people within what we call the regime switch sides, right? I mean, mm-hmm. in some cases, literally, you had Mark Zuckerberg swapping a blue hat for a red one, right?
And yes.
I saw all the signs. I noticed that the press were kind of normalizing Trump. You had people like Bill Maher, right? Do you remember Bill Maher?
Yes.
Or you know Bill Maher? I mean, if you know how to read the media, he was softening Trump support.
And yes.
He was undermining the Democrat campaign.
He was.
And there were all sorts of other signs like, okay, if the Democrats are serious about stopping Hitler, right? Why aren't they throwing mm-hmm. Josh Shapiro at it? Why aren't they where's the big guns? Where's Gavin Newsom? They were clearly half-hearted about Kamala. And that's why I never bought in, like, I never gave her a chance, because in pro wrestling, there's something mm-hmm. called a jobber, right? A jobber mm-hmm. is someone who's put there to lose. And the Democrats, I think, took the dive. I think they decided, right, we're going to put Trump in again, and we're going to work out a different strategy, because the people at the top have changed the signals have changed. Uh-huh. That was my read on the election, and I still think that's happened, basically. And now I think it's pretty obvious that Trump didn't drain the swamp. He's actually just, like, is the swamp, basically.
Yes.
He's become one with it.
It would be interesting if they strategized to that degree and just thought, well, if he gets in again, because it seems incumbents are failing, that he will go off on a bad note, MAGA will implode, and then we can put in, like, whomever in 2028 and they'll just win. I don't know if they were really thinking in, like, long-term strategy like that, or if it's just that Biden refused to step down because he's just old and stubborn, and mm-hmm. who else were they going to put in, like, last minute that had, like, a tie to this last administration? I don't know. Like, they just pretty much had to put in Kamala, and they felt like they'd had no other choice, and they were just gonna, I don't know, take the L there. Or, yeah, was it more intentionally thought that maybe it'll be good if Trump gets back in for a minute, because he does tend to disappoint?
Well, one of my frustrations over the past few years is that Trump, I mean, it's waning. It's definitely waned now. But Trump always had this amazing capacity to bring you along for one last ride. You know, people mm-hmm. talk about the Fell for It Again award now. But I think back at moments where I fell for it, where I was like, I'm going to get sucked in for a new
yes.
cycle, of me, right? And it's stuff that people have completely forgotten about now, right? But I remember, like, Alex Jones went on, like, they were talking, this was in Trump 1.0 now. And I was already mm-hmm. like, look, Trump, all the stuff that people say now, he always chickens out, he's got the wrong team around him, all that stuff, like, you know, anybody who lived through the first Trump presidency can remember that yeah. exact cycle, and then you'll yeah. do something else to distract people again. But I remember there was this one news cycle about these fight, like, you know, it was like the RICO files or something. I can't remember. And Alex Jones made a big hype about it, and I got sucked in, and I was like, oh, I wonder what they are. And then I remember distinctly being like, hold on, these files that he put it behind Scribd, Alex Jones did. I was like, I can't believe I got sucked in. This is all just bullshit. It's all.
Yeah.
Literally a road to bullshit. And once you've lived through enough storylines like that, you notice that no Trump story ever pays off. It never has
no.
that satisfying deal. You are always blue-balled. You are always left kind of not, you know, not getting the satisfying
yes.
send-off that you want. But then the election thing happened, okay, in Biden Trump in 2020, and I was convinced that, I mean, well, that was exciting because it was so unprecedented, because, you know, the president didn't take the L. He was like, uh-huh. Trump was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna say it's mass fraud. So I was kind of into that storyline. But then I remember it distinctly. It was like the day of Biden's inauguration or something like that, and all of these clowns, like the Sidney Powells and the Michael Flynn. And do you remember that whole cast of characters?
Yes.
They all got together on a podcast. And it, honestly, it was the biggest boomer. It was like, these people do not have it. They have, because it was all like, oh, these people know what's coming and, you know, it's going to be the Kraken and all of this. Honestly, they didn't have a clue. And it was just like boomer hour on there. And that's when I told myself, like, never again am I going to fall for it. But then, you see, I faltered. I was good for a few years. But then there was the Georgia mugshot and the fucking assassination. And it's like, how do you live through that and then not get sucked in again?
I know.
Even after he became the president again, the very last time I allowed myself some excitement was when he had Zelensky in the White House. Do you remember that whole thing?
Yes.
And when I saw that that did not actually result in ending the war between Russia and Ukraine, that too was bullshit, that was when I was like, right, never. I will always wait now 2 weeks to see what happens. Trump always chickens out, etc. But can you remember any times where you were sucked back in for a cycle or two?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because this is like a hallmark sort of like dating a quote narcissist, which Trump is. And you effectively have like this parasocial relationship with him, you know, he's the president. And they call it like hoovering. I guess they use the UK term rather than the American for vacuuming, but how you constantly get caught in this cycle with narcissists where you leave or they like betray you, but then they hoover you back up, right? They suck you back in. And that will happen for a while where you kind of like believe them again. And then of course the same thing happens every time. So it's just funny. It's like we're all sort of in this abusive relationship with the narcissist collectively with Donald Trump. But no, actually, during the election in 2024, there were moments where I kind of got excited again, particularly at the end, because they were just like throwing all this stuff at the wall to get anyone on board, right? And they were talking about like doing stuff with Ron Paul and... I don't know, like I still have like a nostalgia for that. Like I came in, like many people, to the Trump train through libertarianism. I was a Ron Paul 2012 person. So I don't know. I did sort of remember thinking like, oh, what if they really do like all this like crazy stuff economically and like really fix things like radically in a way we haven't seen, you know, before. And I couldn't help but like, I don't know, feel a bit excited about it and a little bit hopeful and thinking, I did not vote for him still, but I just remember kind of being a little excited even still when he won. Like I couldn't help but feel a little hopeful because no one else is even...
RFH, you have to admit to me now, did you do the Trump shuffle? Do you remember that fucking thing that people were doing, the Trump shuffle after the week after he won, they were doing it in NFL games and stuff.
His dance?
You didn't do that little dance.
Sometimes I do his dance at like at the bar or something to almost like make fun of him because it's like he's jerking off two guys. Isn't this, you know, the thing he does? It's kind of funny. He dances like such a boomer, but no, I was never like, I'm MAGA, I'm back on the Trump train. But there's absolutely been moments where I've been hopeful again for a little while. But like even then, I'm like conscious of, I know that like most likely it's not going to work out. So it's not like I'm devastated or anything. But you can't help but get a little excited sometimes. He's very good at that.
Now, I guess I'm going to have to ask you this because, you know, as we're recording this, all the Epstein stuff is coming out. Past couple of days, I mean, the performance by Pam Bondi is one of the worst things I've ever seen ever in politics. Past couple of days.
Oh yeah, what did you say? Why are you asking about this when the stock market's up or something?
Oh, just awful. But in my like, it seems to me that it's impossible to come back from any of this. Like, people are at the, like, to me, this is the red line. This is where,
yes,
like for me, like, Trump is not funny anymore. There's no all that stuff we're talking about where you're dragged back in for one second or something like that. I can't do that now because we're talking about protecting, you know, literally paedophile elites at this point.
Yeah, I do think it was a hard line in the sand for a lot of people, just because, again, like, Trump was sort of elected by a lot of people because he's seen as this outsider who's going to, like, come in and clean it up. And with all the QAnon things, you know, people got really on board with this, like, Jeffrey Epstein pedophile ring conspiracy theory. And the idea is that Trump is going to be the savior for this, like, elite cabal that's, like, trafficking kids, possibly eating them, all these crazy things. And then it just turns out he's all over the files and they don't want to release them, or they're, like, heavily redacted because, again, he's all over them. It's clear that they were really close friends. He wasn't just on his plane a couple times, because they're both wealthy and a lot of people had contact with Jeffrey. It's not like everyone who's ever had contact with him was involved in this, but it's clear that Trump and him were actually very close. And once it actually came down to releasing these files, they suddenly didn't want to do it. And then eventually they just had to. But I think it disillusioned a lot of people because, again, like, Trump's whole branding, I guess his whole thing is, again, he's this outsider candidate, and he wasn't. He was in on, it seems, a lot of these goings on. So
yeah, I mean, there's been a few things in there that shocked me. I mean, one, how much of it there is, and how much stuff we consider, like, crazy conspiracy theories, like, oh shit, loads of this stuff is true. Also how candid Jeffrey Epstein is, and the fact that he was like a racial supremacist and, like, openly, you know, some of this stuff was talked about on, you know, like, tiny little forums years ago by people who were considered extremists. And there it is, just, like, all out, all over the files.
Yeah, and I mean, he's linking to TRS to someone.
Yeah, yeah. And then people like Steve Bannon, who's really, like, I mean, just, you know, in daily contact with him all the time. And it's actually led me to wonder about a lot of things, okay? Not everybody's happy with this because, you know, they've been on the internet, or maybe they're on 4chan and so on, but it's pretty clear to me that Jeffrey Epstein was into a lot of stuff that can now be, you know, what you'd recognize as alt-right talking points, or, you know, race and IQ, or, you know, all these sorts of things. And then I look and I think, well, isn't there interesting that there are whole networks of anon accounts who, you know, have been kind of, like, soft defending Jeffrey Epstein, or preparing, like, one of the things that caught my eye was the, you know, I think there's been quite an attempt at demonizing white women in online circles for quite a long time. And, you know, it's been speculated that part of this was an attempt by the likes of Steve Bannon, Jeffrey Epstein, and many other kind of moneyed interests to, you know, put the kibosh on stuff like Me Too back in the day. And if you remember, most of the people who went down or implicated by Me Too were people like Harvey Weinstein. And I wonder.
White women reporting on Jews.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You get it, right? And it started to make me really skeptical of, you know, we talk about falling for it or whatever. How much of the discourse is polluted with things that, think about it from an operational point of view now, right? Something like 4chan, everybody's anonymous, nobody knows each other. Mm-hmm. So that person, right, if you think about it in terms of X now, that person could be a bot, they could be an agent, they could be working directly for Mossad, say, they could be, you don't know, the point is, you don't know who that person is. And the way I think about it is, well, if you're an organized minority as against a disorganized mass, you could, 4chan is the perfect place just to put stuff out there to, you know, red pill people. And I just find it really interesting that so many talking points of Epstein ended up also being the talking points of, I don't know, like Bronze Age pervert, for example.
Yes, it is weird. And it gave me a lot of pause when I was seeing that, like, Moot is in the in the files and they're looking at TRS and all these things. And I was just wondering, like, how much of this crap that I was into 10 years ago by being too online was, like, actually just manufactured and, like, was intentionally done to sort of, I don't know, like, contain us or ghettoize us or like, promote certain narratives that actually suit them and help them. It just makes you think that all of it was, I don't know, it kind of like gave me the creeps, to be honest. It was, but it also makes sense because I, as I got older, I did start to really viscerally react against these things. And it did feel, it felt wrong. I don't know, so, as I guess as my brain developed, a lot of this stuff did start to feel very, something was not right. So it does make sense that perhaps it was all manufactured and created by very dark people. I mean, like, Ghislaine is like, she was like a top Reddit mod or something. And then, you know, Jeffrey Epstein is like involved with the creator of 4chan. It just seems like they've been planting these seeds on the internet and actually manufacturing all of this for years. And it's all been fake.
But I also wonder, you know, I mean, you don't have to go into like your personal experiences or whatnot, but a lot of the mainstream normie talk of Epstein files, it actually comes from a feminist angle. It comes from, yes. Oh, hold on a second, they haven't protected the victims' identities. This is absolutely traumatic for all these women there. And, you know, at the moment in America, you've got all these rich and powerful men who are just not getting their comeuppance, and the victims are struggling to be heard and so on and so forth. And I just wonder about the atmosphere that the talking points that have pushed have created, and whether some of that culture, that kind of Epstein culture, has actually filtered down to, you know, rightist circles in some sort. Because when I think of women in the right, I can't help but think how many cases there have been of, you know, being caught up with men who are just, you know, abusive, or men who, like, you know, women who've tried to tell their stories and then have not been believed because of the culture that's around all of this. Do you understand where I'm going with this?
No, yeah. A lot of, I think, radical feminists have been pointing this out, actually, that it's funny to see a number of men on the right and left, progressives as well as people who are on the right, who just don't like Epstein, I guess, because he's really comes down to him just being Jewish, I think, more than anything. They're kind of like using that as a way to, I guess, attack these people. But that culture has, they're participating in that just on a smaller scale. Like, yeah, they don't have a sex trafficking ring of minors, but they're doing a lot of the same behaviors, like in their own lives, in their own circles. I just think you can't really seem to escape that. It's pervasive. And I think a lot of feminists have also pointed out that this has sort of disseminated these attitudes through porn, through pornography. Mm-hmm. So that sort of, this is like a very radical feminist sort of.
But that was another weird thing in the Epstein files, wasn't it? Of Epstein, yes, actually using porn to, yes, train. Was that something I saw? I think it was you repeating.
Yes, it was that. Sasha Grey. Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. She was like having someone, I think one of his, like, I don't know, prostitutes that he's training or something. he's telling her to watch Sasha Grey, her porn, to like learn, I guess, how to properly have sex with clients and things. And so how many men, you know, grew up watching her stuff? So yeah, all of this is like disseminated, I think, through porn. And it's a very radical feminist analysis, but I think it's correct. And there's a reason that all these sorts of types promote porn. But yeah, it you do see like microcosms of this everywhere. And it's funny kind of seeing anyone criticize it. I think someone else was also pointing this out about Hassan Piker, how he was criticizing the Epstein files. But then it's like you are a known like brothel user in Germany. Mm. And it's like, what do you think is happening there? This is like a microcosm of Epstein. This is like kind of all downstream of what these people are doing, just again on a smaller, slightly less egregious, slightly less conspiratorial scale. But it is effectively the same dynamic occurring over and over and over again. And it's just pervasive.
Just to change track a little bit, to talk about something other than Epstein. One of the things that you were very early on, you and your kind of circle on Twitter, was absolutely hating J.D. Vance.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to admit, I found it really funny. you know, there's that meme of him with the fat face and all of that.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like that came out of your circle. I saw you guys memeing around J.D. Vance. And then it exploded, and then it kind of became like really mainstream. And he even like it became so mainstream, he even started using it himself. But why do you guys hate J.D. Vance so much? And where did that come from?
Oh, it was so visceral for me. It's like pre-verbal. Like I really didn't know anything about J.D. Vance when he was announced. Actually, I guess he was elected around 2020 or something. And I was just very not online during that time. I was really out of politics for a while. I was going through like a whole divorce. So like I was just not that time of like politics is I missed a lot, and I don't remember a ton of that. So I missed out on J.D. Vance being elected and him being this, I don't know, like white Obama type figure that came up from Ohio and had like weird Teal connections. I just missed this whole chapter basically. But the moment they announced him and I saw his face, I was just angry. I didn't know who he was. I just knew I could not stand him. I hated him so much. And then, you know, quickly the clips start coming in of him talking, and he's talking about cat ladies, and I'm like, kill yourself. Something about his like mannerisms and the way he speaks and his physiognomy, everything about it just told me I hate this person. I want him to die. And sometimes you're wrong, sometimes it's something totally irrational, but everything I thought about him in that moment, just seeing his face, I think has been completely vindicated. Like, I don't think I'm surprised by any of his behavior or the way he's acted or how kind of clueless in a way he is, like socially, and how just creepy and inhuman he comes off. Like the, I'll have whatever works, whatever donuts works. Like he can't like order a donut. I don't know. It's just like a visceral gut reaction. And again, like everything he's done has been completely in line with what I thought I was seeing the moment they announced him. He's just fake and sniveling and groveling and pathetic and weird and awkward. And yeah. And he's got creepy ties to Peter Thiel. I think he's gay. Everything about it is just not trustworthy, and it's wrong. And he's changed his name like three times, four times.
I think what one of the weirdest things for me is that he was the first politician that I can think of, major top line politician, to really pander to our bit of the internet.
Yes, and it's disgusting.
And a lot of people, kind of, well, you know, oh, it's amazing, you know, I'm one mutual away from the vice president, all that sort of stuff. To me, I mean, I hate to use the kind of lingo of your circle, but it's like it's pick me energy, isn't it? He really is a pick me.
It is, and that's why I find him so untrustworthy, because you can tell it's not coming from like any sort of genuine feeling. Like he's just desperate for like the approval of like captive dreamer. And it's like, what kind of person is one desperate for that? And then how does a person like that like become vice president? Like, it's just everything about it is wrong. And no one in power should be looking for approval from weird little chuds on Twitter. Like, that should not be like your MO. It's just very bizarre and pathetic. And maybe it's because I've seen it too many times with these weird tech nerds like Elon, and a lot of them hang around X and are interacting with people like we know, like you're like a degree of separation, probably, or 2 degrees of separation from like Elon and like Andreessen. And
Andreessen.
Yeah. Yes. They're on X, like in group chats, talking to these people desperate for the approval of like chuddy techie 22-year-olds. It's just so bizarre. 22-year-old men.
Yes, it's so it's strange. Really, I mean,
bizarre. You're a grown man. You're a billionaire. Why are you doing this? Something's not right. And I just don't trust people who act this way. And JD is that.
Do you remember when Elon Musk was playing that game? And he had to be number. He wanted to show all the trudge that he was number one in this game, this particular video game. And then it turned out he was paying someone to play it on his behalf or something.
Yeah, like Diablo.
So weird. Like, what's wrong with you? You're already the world's richest man. Why do you why do you yearn the approval of these horrible anons? You know,
exactly. And it's a characteristic of many people in tech. It's like nothing will ever be enough for them. They can be billionaires. They can be literally nearly a trillionaire on their way to becoming a trillionaire. They can be have all this money and power, and somehow it's not enough for them. Like, they are still just desperately sniveling for the approval of weirdos.
But you see, you mentioned my least favorite person on all of Twitter, right? And I hate almost everybody, but my least favorite of all of them is Captive Dreamer. He is like my nemesis. He is the Joker to my Batman. Okay, I really despise him. There's a symbiotic relationship between the two, though. It's not just the weirdness of JD Vance and Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. It's the symbiotic patheticness of the Captive Dreamer too. You know, where it's just like he lives for the little moment where Elon says interesting underneath.
Yes.
Gets that bit of engagement. And I just hate the whole thing. I really hate it. And it's mutually reinforcing. Oh, it's horrible. I hate
that is so true. They're both like desperate for each other's approval. And it's like, how did this even occur? 40 years ago, this would not be a dynamic. There wouldn't be some random chud that some billionaire is
killing. I had this. I mean, one of the reasons I don't like going to events and things, RFH, okay, right-wing events, is because beyond a certain point, they all turn into a gay club, right? Every other person's gay. I mean, you don't have to go to many right-wing events to figure out, oh, well, half the guys here are gay. Okay, that's one weird thing. But I've had this theory over the years that conservatives in general, right-wingers in general, are basically like political bottoms. Like they are, they're all, like there's some masochistic thing. And if you take the Captive Dreamer, think of his dynamic with Trump and MAGA and so on, okay? I used to joke that Trump could get on stage, smear all his face in like horse manure and shit and so on, and Captive Dreamer would find a way to be like, oh, that was genius move, Mr. President. This is the best thing that you can possibly do. In fact, here's me also smearing my own face and shit type thing. There's something about that dynamic that I think is deeply masochistic and comes from, there's something. It's not just in him. It's in a lot of conservatives. It's in a lot of Republicans, Tory members here.
Yeah.
They've got this kind of like sub thing going on. I don't know what it is, but there we are.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And I think this is just like a facet of the conservative brain, to be honest, not to like live out, but you know, they've shown like studies on conservative versus like liberal brains, and they've shown like conservatives are more prone to black and white thinking, like larger amygdalas, they're more hierarchical. So like they're very invested in these hierarchies, particularly these male ones. So I think they are. The sense you're getting that they're like a bottom is true, and this actually falls in line with a phenomenon that a lot of people find confusing, but actually makes perfect sense when you think of the fact that conservatives are effectively male bottoms, is that Republican American men have like the highest reported incidences of having cuck fetishes. Like about 60% of them or something. This is like a survey of like 2,000 men, like in America, or they were looking at their, I don't know, like sexual fantasies. And for the what they one of the most interesting things you find in that is that conservative American males, one of the most common fantasies they have is cucking, is a bigger, more powerful alpha male coming in and servicing their wife because they are so invested in that hierarchy and they do see themselves as bottoms and they kind of like asserting it actually. So I do think there's some weird psychosexual thing going on there within the conservative mind. And yeah, they are just spiritually a sort of bottom. And it also explains a lot of their, I would say, animosity with women as well, because again, they are so hierarchical. It's like alpha male and then beta male and then just all women beneath them. So they're very just like invested in asserting this exact hierarchy, which is why they want to be like, they want to be subservient to the alpha and then they want to like rule over their sad little trad wife at home. It's comforting.
So,
They like it.
one of the things that's often entertained me about your Twitter account is that, see, this is the mark of a heel, right? A heel in pro wrestling is someone who goes for the boo, someone who actually goes to the ring, tells the crowd, you're a bunch of phonies or whatever, and they all boo and throw rubbish. You, armed with these sorts of details, know what button, you always know what buttons to press to really trigger the kind of contard, the boomertard, the MAGA faithful. And that's one of the dynamics I've noticed that you press on quite a lot, is that is exactly what you just outlined. So it's kind of interesting.
It's because I spent all that time with these people, and it wasn't for nothing. It was apparently to learn how to really upset
So just to come back to the serious point about JD Vance here, after Trump, I mean, one of the big questions is there life in MAGA after Trump? Now, I take,
No.
like, do you think that, I mean, first of all, do you think Vance will be the Republican candidate? And second, if he is he going to get curb stomped by Gavin Newsom or someone like that?
If he's the candidate, which at this point I don't think they will push him because how, I mean, you'd have to be so stupid. I mean, maybe I'm just delusional, but I think he's so unlikable. I think women look at him and they're like, ew. Like, there's just something about him that women viscerally react to because he's just so like pathetic and chuddy and desperate. And he's not good with people. Like he's just very awkward. Again, he can't like order a donut without like he just seems like he's like an alien from another planet. So I don't think they're gonna run him. I think they're trying to push him out. I think that they are, well, they're trying to make him the scapegoat for all these unpopular things about Trump because while you see other people kind of being quiet entirely, like Rubio, who I think will actually be the nominee, I think that's who they're trying to push. But you see other people being quiet or being like, I don't know, Trump will, he'll go really hard at first, but then he'll soften, right? This is what he always does, obviously, because he's a better instinct for these things. He's just letting JD run his mouth on Twitter and go really hard in supporting things that are just unpopular. Like the ICE stuff, as much as, you know, X wants to pretend that like no one's offended by this and it's just a bunch of libtards that are crazy, that, you know, that they're everyone else is fine with the fact that these people were shot in the street. I don't think average Americans are fine with it. I think
No.
they've shown that so support for demolishing ICE is like a more popular position than ever. It was never a majority position. Now it's like 52. It's like a little over majority. That was unheard of. No one thought that. Like,
I mean, abolishing ICE was like a proper kind of fringe.
Yeah, Antifa. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now it's a pretty popular position. Like a slight majority of people agree with getting rid of it. So, but they're just letting JD Vance run his mouth and go so hard in the paint supporting stuff that is clearly unpopular. So they're just kind of letting him be the scapegoat. He's too stupid, I think, to realize that. He's so desperate for approval from Captive Dreamer and being Trump's lapdog, I guess he thinks, oh, if I'm just the loyalist dog and I let you kick me the most, you'll love me the most. Like, he's like an abused puppy. That will somehow work out for him, and it won't. So I don't think that it won't. It will destroy him. And beyond that, he's unlikable.
One of the things that Trump and Bannon keep on doing is floating the idea of a Trump third term.
And yeah, I know.
I mean, I listen to a lot of quite libtarded, like my phone is broken at the moment, which means when I drive here every day in the morning and when I drive back in the night, I've got this libtarded call-in talk radio station on. And one of the huge talking points on there has been, look, ICE is Donald Trump's stormtroopers, basically. This is like the brown shirts or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep on saying that in the midterms, if Trump thinks he's going to lose, he's going to interfere with the voting process and he's going to have ICE there to intimidate black and brown voters, to suppress the vote. And they're talking about, you know, why does he keep on mentioning a third term? Or is this just kind of like blue anon fantasy nonsense? Or do you think there's something in it? Because from a certain point of view, Trump has gone like, it's not in a direction that I would have wanted, but there's quite a lot of like, quite fashy things about what Trump has been up to and the way he's been presenting himself.
Yes.
You know, this palace room that he's building in the White House and all this sort of stuff. It's kind of like, it's like he's like a mad king or something. Do you think there's any prospect that they just go for it? That there's just like, right, this is it. It's going to be like the Trump empire now. I'm not stepping down.
I don't think it's like a non-zero thing. I think a couple years ago, if you'd asked me that, I'd find that really comical. Yeah. I think I'd find that a really comical idea, but I think the chances of that keep kind of increasing weirdly, but I think most likely no. I don't think they're going to actually do that. Bannon himself has just kind of always been more radical and a bit of a nut and saying things like we're going to get him a third term, but weirdly, I don't even know if Trump wants that. Like, he is in his 80s at this point. So I don't doubt that Bannon really wants to do that and will sort of try. But that doesn't mean that Trump is actually going to go for that. I think most likely it won't happen. But it's definitely something I've taken more seriously than I would have a couple years ago.
One of the things I've noticed with J.D. Vance is that he's... how can I put it? Like, because he's pandering to the internet, he's pandering to the Twitter feed a lot. He's a lot less kind of rah-rah Israel than a lot of the other GOP. And it's obviously a strategy, right? It's obviously he doesn't want us to be seen to be too much of a Zionist and so on. And, you know, he's kind of like softening that, you know, he may, i.e. there's a certain portion of the... MAGA higher ups, including Vance or maybe Thiel, that can see that one of the things that is losing Trump popularity is the perception that he's a puppet of Netanyahu or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any candidate, whether it's Vance or Gavin Newsom or some other Democrat or somebody else, kind of going there? Because it seems to me that the candidate that does that would be lighting a stick of dynamite or something in American politics, because that seems to be that, like, if you think of like the story of Fuentes last year and, you know, what everybody's been talking about since pretty much the 12-day war with Iran last year, that's kind of dominated things in a way that I didn't really see coming. Like Tucker Carlson and, you know, all that stuff with Mark Levin and all of that stuff was for the past 12 months. It's been very front and center. I think Netanyahu is in Washington for like the seventh time at the moment. So this is like, yeah, this is a pretty prescient thing in American politics. Do you see any candidate going there, or do you think it's just going to be like it has been forever?
I think they'll sort of soft suggest that, but I still think you can't like fully come out. Obviously, I think sentiment toward Israel is like finally getting more negative. Like that's like more mainstream opinion. It's not as like fringe to be critical of Israel, but I don't think you can come out fully and just kind of say like he's a puppet. There is a way you could like frame that in a way that's softer and like appeals to even conservatives too, like saying you could, I think a Democrat might actually try to kind of get him on not being like quote America first, like, you know, we have to I think they'll kind of say that you know Trump is not prioritizing America, that he's prioritizing Israel too much or something. But it's going to come, I think it'll be like they'll say it in a softer way. I don't think they're going to come out and fully speak in a way that sounds kind of conspiratorial or something, where, you know, we're being run by Zionists and right. All these sorts of things. But I do think people will kind of hint at that or suggest it softly, because I mean, anti-Israel sentiment is growing. And I think a lot of people, even if they're not like rabidly anti-Semitic or anti-Jew, they are kind of sick of Netanyahu. And I think he's sort of a safe target in a way. Like you can kind of just say, you can even like be pro-Israel and like pro like Jews deserve a homeland, but this Bibi guy, you know, not a good guy. So I think they will sort of bring that up, but again, in just a much softer way.
More likely from the left than from the right, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd have thought so as well. So, and I mean, just before we wrap up with this, I mean, what, you think the Democrats will sweep in the midterms and we're going to get a Democrat president?
I think it's very clear that they're winning the midterms. I mean, it's just looking very bad for the Republicans. And given everything that's been happening so far, yeah, I think the Dems are really fired up. They're angry. They I think they felt very defeated after the election in 2024, but now I think they're feeling like, oh no, like we can get this back. Like they've wasted their cultural capital. Like they're not succeeding in the way they thought they would. Like we're more clever. We can do it. Like I think they really, I think they are hopeful and they see a chance. And they're fired up to come and vote for.
So let's pretend the Democrats are insurgent again.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to be? Is it going to be like woke is back? Do you think we're going to get a different left?
It'll be a softer woke. We're not going to go back to like the millennial peak era of like safe spaces and, you know, like 32 different pronouns. I think we did that. People were exhausted by it. They didn't like it. I think a lot of people just tolerated because they thought that they couldn't they couldn't really say anything against it, so it's like somehow offensive. But I don't think we're going back there. I think we're just going to have like more like a softer kind of 90s liberalism in a way, which I'm perfectly fine with.
Do you think there's any prospect for America, and I'm not trying to be offensive when I say this, to go back to being a normal country, right? Because the past decade has been, you know, blue hats and red hats. There's going to be a civil war, Tim Pool, all this, you know, it's the most important election of your entire lifetime. If the other team loses, it's over for America, blah, 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 yeah. blah. Do you see any of that de-escalating as we go forward, or are people going to get more and more insane in your view?
I don't see us de-escalating. I don't know if it's going to get worse, but I think we're just kind of stuck where we're at. People in this country just really fucking hate each other. Like they despise each other, and progressively people are just siloed off into whole different realities. Like, the monoculture is over. Like, a lot of people point this out, but it's true, and it contributes to all of that. We're not like watching the same movies or watching the same TV shows or reading the same news sources. So I just think at this point with the internet, it's impossible, because when everyone's getting different inputs, you're literally living in a different reality entirely. And I don't see how we square that. I don't see how people get back together. Everyone's going to be siloed off still. And there's not going to be, unless we're putting like three channels back on the television and, you know, we get rid of social media. No, I just think it's impossible with the technology we have at this point. I think that's really what's deciding that. But it's profitable. It's profitable to kind of silo people off and give them more and more of this extreme kind of content. You know, that's what keeps them engaged. So, and then, you know, they get into their own bubble over here. Liberals are in their own bubble over there. People like it too much. Like, they complain about it, but they choose it every day. They like it. They want to be catered to in this way. They want this like high dopamine content that's just like making them angry, that's not necessarily very nuanced. So people have made their choice. The technology's here. It's not going anywhere. I don't see us really getting back together. I think that's just where we're at now.
One of the things that I've been interested in is the extent to which what we see on Twitter is kind of like a hyper reality. It's a hyper reality, okay? Mm-hmm. What is the relationship between hyper reality and just like real and like actual real life and real life politics and all, and that? Because I mean, I've come to the view that as long as politics is just people saying shit on Twitter, basically, or even streams like this, it's not really politics. It's a simulacra. It's a kind of simulation of something that kind of looks and feels like politics, but actually it's just a kind of headcanon. It's all fantasy. It's like, you know, whole arcs happen on Twitter that you ask somebody down the street and it just didn't, you know, if you're not on there, you don't even know about it. Things like come and go. What's your sense on that? What's your sense of how much of hyper reality is real, or and can people, even if they've been part of hyper reality, go back to living in the real world or go back to what is real? I don't know.
I mean, I think you could easily go back to living in the real world if you just got offline. Like, eventually, like, the inputs just aren't there anymore and your brain will just reset. But unless someone's going to take the internet away from them, I don't see them doing that. Right. Because again, people like are effectively addicted and they want to do this and they are choosing it every day and they like it. So unless it's taken from them forcibly,
well, I mean, I don't see them. Keir Starmer here said, threatened to ban X. And I was like, come on, do it. Come on. And this is the thing I've noticed. I mean, Biden was like this to some extent as well. Starmer's like this as well. The left never actually follow through with anything either. They never, it's always a blue ball if you're a leftist as well.
Yes. It is for everyone, I think. It's just kind of the politics. And because you are just living, like you said, like in your headcanon online. But, you know, this stuff does break containment. Like, increasingly online is real, is reality. It's like creating reality because more and more people are online and fewer people aren't. So it all does break containment and sort of bleed out into reality. And I think people are effectively like, sort of casting spells online, and they are reaching outside of the screen and actually shaping what we're doing. I mean, to bring up JD again, you really do have a vice president that is effectively getting his talking points from being hyper online, and he is in office. Like, that's not nothing.
One of the most incredible things is watching you and your friends meme JD Vance fat face, that meme, right? And then there was a moment where, because JD Vance is hated in this country because every once in a while he starts having a go at our government and stuff like things like that, and he's got this thing where he comes over and lectures Europe about free speech and things like this. So when he came here, some, and I think it was leftists who did this. They got like a massive, like billboards, and they put it on the side of trucks, and they just rode it down the street. So this massive 20-foot J.D. Vance fat face was going down the street, you know, before he arrived. And I was like, this is like actual Twitter.
Yes.
Into real life.
Yeah.
And then because J.D. Vance is a creature of the internet, he then embraced the fat face and started memeing it himself. It was kind of like, this is so weird. It's a kind of, I don't know how to. And then I think, you know, if it wasn't for Twitter, I wouldn't know what was in the Epstein files. Because if, you know, if you just read the newspapers just about Prince Andrew and you don't, you know, so I go back and forth. I have a very much a love-hate relationship with it, which I'm sure you can appreciate yourself.
Oh yeah, I definitely say that's true for myself as well. But I think if I could choose right now to blow up social media, I would. I think I'd get rid of all of it. I'm at the very least. It would be great if we could ban it for people under 18. I think they started to do this in Australia, which I think
doing it here as well. Under 16 in this country, it's going to be banned soon. Yeah,
I think that's wonderful. I think we need to do that, but it won't happen here because we're too like beholden to these businesses and to particularly to tech. So we're just going to continue like rotting kids' brains. But it would be wonderful if we could at least achieve that. And I'm really glad that some of these other countries in the Anglosphere are actually doing this. I think we've been needing to do it for a very long time at this point.
They see it's not just kids' brains, it's our brains.
I know, but at the very least, we could at least not have people grow up in their most formative years on the internet. That would be helpful.
Would be good. All right, well, thank you very much, RFH. Where can people find you again?
At Hollow Earth Turf on Twitter and RFH on Substack.
And I'll just remind people, pick up a course at the Academic Agency, Trivium, the bestseller there. And I'd be interested to see the comments on this one, because I'm sure there are people who watch me who are fans of yours and also people who aren't fans. So we'll see how this one goes. Cheers. Cheers.
Bye. Thank you.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.